it is important in your meditation that you get the proper type of information that is needed for you to engage into your meditation. We cannot see from the outside and check with you and say, well, you are going a little bit too far to the right. Now go a little bit to the left. We don't see from the outside. So you are alone in your exploration. And if you don't have the proper type of information, then you may sometimes just go round and waste time. So it is important that you get as much as possible proper information. Although this sense of maybe a journey that you go from here to here or to there may be slightly misleading, because in meditation you don't go from here to there, you go from here to here. And it's not possible to make meditation for you. It is not possible to give some kind of fantastic information or description that suddenly it's so simple. Doesn't mean it is complicated. But one difficulty in speaking about meditation the way we are doing it here, that language can be misleading very clearly. And often we are using some type of words that are not very correct. And if we are careless, then it is easy. We take some kind of common language and we use it. And that's fine. But I think that can be very misleading. And I am saying that knowing it, because I've been misled by what I believe now was not proper expression. One example that I will give you, the sense of observation, observe, you know, to watch this and that, which is exactly what meditation is not about. It's not about observing something or watching something or looking at something, but it's much more intimate. It's rather being that, feeling, experiencing. So it's not at all about this sense of distance that an observation may mean. Yet it is easy to speak about observing an experience. But if we are very precise, observing an experience is meaningless. Meaningless. So that's why I think it's very important to use proper words. It's not always easy, but it is important at least to try to find a proper way of expressing that is not misleading. So I want to bring a few precision tonight about what is meditation we're doing here, hoping not to use too many misleading expressions. If you find misleading expression, you're most welcome to mention them to me. I'm always willing to learn. So what we practice mainly here is what is called vipassana. Vipassana means a clear seeing. So we may wonder what it means, a clear seeing, and why is it so important to see clearly. To see clearly in the Buddhist tradition, it is linked with freedom. So the importance to see clearly is with respect to freedom, not because we want to become philosopher, but because we are caring for freedom, inner freedom, of course. So according to the Buddhist tradition, we are bound not by the world, not by life, not by reality. What is binding us, making us to suffer, is our confusion, not reality. So seeing clearly means that we can get rid of confusion, and if we get rid of confusion, then there is freedom. Then there is no bondage. So that's what we're exploring. That's why we are meditating. Not for the sake of feeling better, feeling well, joy. All that may happen, but that's not what it is for. And if we were only to aim at feeling well or better, maybe we would practice in a slightly different way. The way we practice is meaningful because what we are looking for is freedom. Now, of course, I say freedom, we'll say, so what is freedom now? Well, let's go step by step, maybe another day we'll explore that, what it means by freedom. So seeing clearly, what does it mean? So that the meaning of the word vipassana, it's in a sharp way, and passana come from the root past, to see in a sharp way. Everybody say, I see clearly, what is the problem? Go outside, I see clearly, so what you are speaking about? Or maybe if I put my proper spectacle, then I see clearly. But clearly here has a very precise meaning. It see clearly mean not to see through concepts, not through ideas, not through point of view. To come to a way of seeing before all that. An inner sense in seeing before any kind of preconception. That why we are practicing the way we are practicing. To see before any preconception. In this innocent way. Now that can be questioned, is that possible or not? But at least the meditation is organized or structured in a way that what it is aiming at, what it is exploring experiencing, not only seeing, experiencing anything before we start to put in point of view, beliefs, ideas, to get to something much more primordial in our own life, in our own experience. And to understand that, to understand this way of experiencing before any point of view, belief, we have to understand the distinction between knowing and to be aware. In a sense, all our meditation is based on that distinction, knowing and being aware. So what does it mean to know? Knowledge that can be gotten. Knowledge, we know, it's something that can be gathered. We can accumulate knowledge. Some people have a lot of knowledge, some people less knowledge. And if we put all this knowledge in book, you know, it becomes huge encyclopedia. So knowledge is something that can be really gathered, accumulated. Knowledge is something that we can possess, that we can also show. You know, some people are showing their knowledge. Usually people who don't have so much, but they're showing their knowledge. So it's something we, in a sense, we can keep, we can hold on to, holding on to one's own knowledge. So the way that we are making knowledge, gathering knowledge, is a transposition of any experience. When we transpose an experience, seeing, hearing, tasting, or whatever, experience that is changing so fast. There was a nice sunset tonight, and it, of course, it changed. We cannot keep it. I cannot stop the sun or whatever, and it goes away. It's changing every instant. So the experience cannot be kept. What I can keep is a memory. So the memory is transforming an experience into knowledge. Now I can speak about the sunset, maybe trying to describe it. So any experience that is being translated give rise to knowledge, and that can be kept. Never the experience. It's not possible to experience again something that we've been experiencing. And we know memory is not the real experience. It's just an image, some representation of this experience. But we transform immediately any experience from the senses. We transform them immediately into knowledge, that can be kept. And then we can tell the people, I saw that, you know, if we were to walk around a flower, that may be uncommon flower, we can come back and tell our friends, not today because we're not supposed to speak, but maybe at the end, I saw this flower. I don't need to bring the person to the flower. I can tell it because I kept that in mind. So something that can be kept, can be gathered. So we transform immediately any experience into knowledge. And that is not a mistake. We need that. In order to be efficient in the world, to function, we need to transform that. What does it mean? It means any experience, hearing something, we know what we hear. Suddenly, I hear a car, I hear the dog, or I hear somebody coming, or I hear the gong. If you did not transform this experience into knowledge, you would not end up being here. You know, this experience of hearing, and you know that is a gong, and even the meaning that it means that it is time maybe to come here. But what we need to function is knowledge, not so much the experience. It doesn't matter if I'm not hearing very well, I've heard the gong, I recognize it, and what I keep in my mind, the gong has rung, so that I can keep. So usually we have very little interest for experience, but we have interest for knowledge. I remember leading groups in Tibet, actually. We go through a very nice place near Tingri. Many high peaks. There is one mountain, very nice mountain, is a Shoyu. So people asking me, I don't know many mountains, this one I know, because people have asked me so many times, so what is that, you know? Or that's a Shoyu. Then they turn their head away. They've seen the mountain, they know it's a Shoyu, so they can go to something else, you know? If I did not tell them, they will look at it, I wonder what it is, and they will stay with the experience as soon as they got the name. They are ready for something else. So we need, in order to function, knowledge, but not experience. So we just get as little experience as is needed for knowledge, and we don't care about the experience. But you see, show you when I say the name of the mountain, it is because I had heard it many times before. So knowledge is always transforming something, some experience, into something which is known, which means which is past in a sense. So I'm not anymore just with the experience, I'm already now through a past experience. This transformation immediately makes it into a past experience. And that is what knowing is about, what knowledge is about. Learning is discovering, knowledge is something that is completed. I put the proper name there. So this is so important in the way that we function, that finally we don't relate to the experience anymore. We relate to what we think about the experience. As soon as we can name it, we can know it, we relate to the knowing of the experience, not the experience itself. When you come to the meditation hall, so at every step, you have a different view. At every step, what you are seeing is completely different. Maybe you look this way, and after that, this way is completely different. Yet, for you and for me, we see the meditation hall. But if we were to take a picture from one side and to the other, we could not say, certainly, it's the same hall. So as soon as we come in, we see what we think, not what we see. There's a sense of stability, this is stable, and then I walk into that. Because I'm holding to the transformation of this experience of seeing into an object of knowledge. If somebody is coming away, and I say, oh, that's, this person is coming away, I have transformed the seeing into a knowledge. But I can be mistaken. Maybe the person is coming closer. Oh, that's not the person I thought. So knowledge can always be mistaken because it's a transformation. a translation, any translation can be mistaken. The experience cannot be mistaken. That the fact I was seeing, that cannot be mistaken. The fact that I'm hearing something, that cannot be mistaken. Maybe what I'm hearing, the interpretation, the knowledge is wrong, but the bare experience is not being mistaken. So as soon as there's a translation, there's a possibility for confusion. So to know or knowledge is a transposition already. There is room for confusion. And we always take what we think for the experience itself. Suddenly we believe what we see the meditation hall. So suddenly there is a confusion there about what the experience is and what it is about, the meaning of it. And in this confusion, then we are locked. There is a sense of stability, of certainty, that is not in the experience itself. There are quite a few sentences by Nietzsche about that, very precise. I did not find the proper English translation. I have one here, found from the English translation of Nietzsche's book. He said, we do not merely designate things by words. Not only do we put words, we originally believe that through them, through the words, we grasp what is true in things. Believe that I'm reaching the truth, something that is true. So it's the name I'm projecting into that, the show you I was seeing, that I'm grasping at something which is true in this mountain. Which is, of course, very relatively true, because the Nepali call it in another name, you know, the Tibetan that call it show you. So depend from which side you see the mountain. So when we put names, then another place when Nietzsche says, when we put name, it's like we bring a fence that finally make it impossible for us to really know or to really discover. Because this starts to be some kind of screen that blocks us from really entering into a deeper connection with the experience. So that is for knowledge. Of course it is very important. It's not a question about this being not important. We function through that. It's not that problem, but awareness is different. Awareness, in the sense that we want to give it here. Awareness is the experiencing before, or the type of consciousness that is free of concept. We'll call awareness, a consciousness that is free of concept. It is, in a sense, within the experience. That is not holding onto the translation of the experience. But awareness cannot be practiced. It's not a tool that you can practice on a language that you practice, as if you were to practice Italian or something like that. So awareness is not something that one can practice. It is. What we practice here, we can say it is satipatthana. Satipatthana is what we organize here in our practice. We practice satipatthana in order, for vipassana, in order to develop a clear seeing before the concept. So satipatthana means, Tibetan translate it, I think, quite clearly. This word is quite complex, and it is bringing the mind or memory close to the experience. But close means here without distance. That's what it means to stay intimate within the experience itself. So that's what we are practicing. And in this word, satipatthana, there is the word sati. Sati, that what we translate as mindfulness. So we can say we practice mindfulness if we like. But there is a little problem with that mindfulness, as with sati, that it's a word that has many meanings. and is used, here I'm referring to the sutras, to the word sati is used in many different ways, with very different meaning. There are practices where one would just recite the name of the Buddha, you know, Buddha, 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 and that is being mindful of Buddha. So you see, this is memory. So in this sense, the mindfulness has also the sense of memory, to remember. So if we get the definition of mindfulness in the classical text, and I see here the translator has already tried to give a deeper, more intimate sense of this mindfulness or sati. He said the word sati derives from the root meaning to remember, but as a mental factor it signifies presence of mind. Presence of mind. Attentiveness to the present, rather than the faculty of memory regarding the past. So here the translator is already trying to open the meaning of this word. And we know in English, mindfulness can mean to pay attention to something, being mindful of one's words, being mindful of one's steps, not to hurt someone. So it has the meaning of being attentive to something. But it has, in a deeper sense, the meaning of being present every instant. It has, in a deeper sense, the meaning of just to be aware. So to be aware before there is a translation into knowledge and an experience, specific experience. Yeah, we can take as an example hearing. Luckily, our friend is helping us here for hearing. So, we can, maybe some people understand the word in Arabic and know what he's saying. Most likely, yes. although I don't know which word say what, but anyway. So, but we can stay in the experiencing of just hearing. There is a hearing which is just where we are. If now I say that's the muezzin, then I'm already making an object of knowledge, which most probably is true, but I don't know if it is a recording or if it is somebody really singing there. So, if I stay to the experience itself, before I say I'm hearing this and that, it's just this experience of a hearing of a sound. And that I cannot be mistaken. I cannot be mistaken with respect to hearing. Nobody can say, oh, you are not hearing. Cannot doubt I was not hearing. What I was hearing, there may be some confusion there. So in the mindfulness, in this sense of vipassana or satipatthana, if you like, we try not to cling to the concept, but to stay as close as possible to the experience itself. When there is hearing, we try not to immediately put a word of what we're hearing, what it is that we're hearing. Children were playing before, so the children, and of course that's the first, and maybe memories may come around that, but if we stay within ourselves, just this experience of hearing, sound, very typical of children's voice and playfulness, but we stay, what is the sound of that experience? So if we stay intimate with that before we interpret into anything, because we don't need, it doesn't matter. Then we can see there is an awareness here before any interpretation that reveal the meditator to itself. That does not reveal the world, presence of children here or the presence of the muezzin, it just does reveal the presence of oneself to oneself in the practice. and this intimate. Because if there is hearing, while you are seated in meditation, there is a consciousness there. So any experience always reveal a source, if you will, like the source of the experience that can be found out or deduced, but it does reveal even with more certainty, reveal the presence of someone. And that's what we are trying to open to. The presence of someone that is being revealed in any experience. It doesn't matter which experience. Nice sound, bad sound, nice physical sensation, not nice physical sensation. Doesn't matter what, it's always revealed with certainty the presence of a being there. And that's what we like to discover in a clear way, without any preconception. Without saying, oh, that's me. I am hearing, or I am seeing, or whatever. Without even going to that just before. That is being revealed. And that we can call awareness. Awareness is being revealed. So there is a very, very clear distinction between being aware and, or mindful in this sense, and to know. So again, it's not again, we are not fighting against, we're not making a club against knowing, knowledge or whatever. We're just trying to explore our life, to expand in a more intimate way. Because it may lead us to some more freedom. I want to come back to hearing. I was reading the biography of John Cage. I've spoken about that already, and it's interesting that he was looking for liberation for sounds, so sounds could be themselves. So sounds do not represent, in his exploration, sound would not represent something other than themselves. So it's getting closer, intimate to the experience of just hearing. Sound revealing the presence of children. So sounds are not themselves, they are for children there. They point out to children. I'm not interested in the children in this instance. I'm interested in the sound itself. What is the specificity of this hearing? Because if I don't interpret, I don't translate into an object of knowledge, there is an intimacy within the experience where awareness will be revealed to itself through hearing. Doesn't mean we need to get rid of all experience. On the contrary, in any experience, whatever is happening, in any experience, awareness is revealed to itself. Hearing, seeing, and tasting, and also in mental state, like sleepiness. Sleepiness also reveals awareness to itself. Maybe we'll explore that another time. When there is nobody sitting on your cushion, there is no sleepiness. It's not possible. So if there is sleepiness, it means there is somebody there. There is a conscious being being seated there. That sleepiness is also revealing. So the way to work with hearing, we could hear, of course, send our attention in the direction where the sound is coming. And maybe some people know the village around and they may know from which village it is coming. But that's okay. But what we are, that is gathering knowledge. The muezzin of this village is chanting now. But if we want to stay close to the experience so that it reveals ourselves to ourselves, then we may stay within ourselves. To give some element, maybe of helping, maybe just to leave the attention between our two ears, you know. Just in this space, doesn't mean to be so much precise, but in this space, something is happening. The experience is happening there for me. It's not happening there. That is the cause, but the experience of hearing is happening within me. So if I stay within me, then awareness or my presence will be revealed to itself. So when we step out of ourselves to go to the direction of the cause of the experience, then we lose sight of ourselves. We lose ourselves. Discover the world, but there is endless discovery of the world through knowledge. We lose sight of ourselves. So it's important we stay within ourselves. And that's what our practice is about. I was thinking about our practice of walking meditation, which for me is something that is, can be questioned. For some people it is quite boring or tiring. And I was wondering, what in a sense make walking meditation for some of us difficult? Oh, we may like to move, that's fine, but still it seems that for many of us, there is not a very strong quality of presence in the walking meditation. So why? What is the challenge in this experience? Any movement will of course be the same, but since we are doing walking meditation, I was wondering, so what in a sense is interfering with the capacity for us to be fully in this experience of walking? So we can, of course, there is, in this expanse of the bodily movement, there is physical sensation. Certainly that play a part of it. But it seems that we don't stay very much with it because it's, we are very little present for that. At least for many of us, some people live, it's more natural. So what is interfering with that experience? Of course, we could imagine walking, doing the walking meditation, and then the muezzin is singing, and then one is captivated, and one is listening. So one is disconnecting from just being there in the walking. And I may be aware of that, and maybe coming back, so to speak, to my walking. Or I hear birds, and then suddenly pay attention to the birds. So then we are aware that that's hearing. It's just at this time, if I try to be just in the walking experience, some kind of distraction that I get fascinated. I think that we can recognize soon or less soon, but we know that distinction. But there's something else that is taking place in walking that is normal and that we also need to take care of. It is seeing. We need to see when we are walking. It's not possible. It will be meaningless to walk with closed eyes, you know, and dangerous. And then we'll not gain anything from walking with closed eyes. So in a sense, when we are walking, we also need to be seeing. Most of the time, if the surface where we are walking is very smooth, we don't need so much attention, but if we walk in the grass, for example, or in the land where it's less smooth or less regular, then we really need to look and to see. So it seems there are two experiences. There is the experience of bodily sensation that can reveal the presence in the walking, and at the same time, there's seeing happening. So there are two types of experience. Now, if I give too much energy into looking, then very little is disponible for my experiencing the walking. Or I could walk and suddenly I hear a bird, and then I may turn my head and look at the bird. So one may wonder that a distraction is seeing a distraction in our walking. If it is a distraction, then no wonder that our walking is not so easy. We are distracted and we need to distract ourselves because we need to be looking where we are going. So I think it may be quite interesting to include the experience of seeing in our walking meditation. What I mean to experience, to include, I mean also the awareness of seeing. Not as something that I do as little as possible to stay in the walking, but to be also completely, fully present in seeing. So we saw with hearing, if I send my attention to the village there, I'm not anymore just in the experience, I'm in the construction from that. But now, how will we explain that in seeing? Seeing the hall now. So in a sense, we also project ourselves in front of ourselves in seeing, as we do in hearing, toward the source of the sound. So as we are walking, maybe we are projecting ourselves in front through the looking. And if we project ourselves in front of us through looking, then we cannot be present. We are losing ourselves. We are stepping out of ourselves in the space in front of ourselves. As a program that need to be fulfilled. I'm going up to there. So I'm projecting that space in front of me that I need now to fill through my walking. Then, no doubt, it is very difficult to be present. I'm just in a program that I try to fulfill. So we can also stay within ourselves in seeing. We don't need to step out of ourselves. And you can explore sometimes just looking in one direction or another. Can you stay within yourself when you are seeing? Seeing on the left and right and up and down. Can you still stay within yourself in this experience of seeing? And then when you will be walking, and as many people are looking down, that's fine. Can I be seeing, or do I need to step out of myself and to project myself right in front of myself? And if I do that, then I am not into my walking. So explore also the seeing while walking, or you can be standing or seated somewhere outside, and you may make small movement of your head and up and down and explore. Can I just experience seeing without projecting myself outside? Without leaving myself? And this is very clear, no doubt. If you just experience seeing as seeing, as awareness, then you feel the quality of presence. Seeing is not a distraction. Seeing is also a very strong experience of being present. Seeing suddenly makes you fully present, not lost. So the walking is not being distracted through the seeing, projecting oneself in front, a two or three step in front of oneself. So I think will be quite interesting to explore seeing. Not projecting yourself in front, but staying within yourself in this experience of seeing. I don't know what tools more to give. Tools are always tricky, suddenly they become cumbersome, but maybe to imagine, maybe it's correct, that the image that we are seeing in the seeing is rather on the back of our head, is not in on the eyes, you know. The image is building there so that we are not jumping outside of our eyes, but rather settling back within ourselves where the seeing is happening. Maybe just to not to foster, not to give too much energy in this projection in front of ourselves. So it's the same in seeing as in hearing. If I am projecting myself outside, it means also I'm grasping at the meaning of what is being seen, maybe this tree or that, which of course most of the time is quite important, but there it does make me step out of myself. So what I suggest in your meditation to explore, to play with, don't make it too difficult and complicated. It's not something difficult to explore with seeing It is rather something that needs relaxation and a lack of tension rather than making something difficult. And this kind of exploration sometimes is very meaningful, and sometimes that I don't know what he's speaking about, and I don't know what I'm speaking about sometimes. And sometimes very clear, you know. Oh yes, that's so simple. So not forcing it, not trying, but playing with. And sometimes, as I suggest, you raise your head and look here, and then suddenly, oh yes, there was a quality there. At this instant, there was a quality that I was fully present in seeing. And then next time, I'm again projected. So play with that, explore with that. It really gives a sense of wholeness, of completeness in our experience. Well, when we project ourselves outside, there's a sense of fragmentation. I'm not here, I'm not fully here. So explore that with this aspect of what it means to be just aware or mindful in this sense. Yes, I will stop here for tonight, just this few remarks about what we are practicing. Mindfulness in the sense of being present, not being looking for object or contents of experience, just being experiencing, does not require from us to be complicated, but on the contrary, relaxing into the experience. Not because you will fight or make much effort, but because you relax in the experience that something may be alive there.